Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. Yes, featuring me. Again, trying to explain why I would argue it is bad to create living, feeling things. Feeling living things. Things that feel, whether alive or not. That it's just wrong to support the creation of these monstrosities, monsters, beasts, machines. And frankly, that's what they are. Because they will inevitably endure sensations, events, okay, that will be decidedly negative in their effect on their sentient consciousness, and there really isn't any compensation, okay, for fixing. There's no way to fix it or to exchange something of comparable positive value, because the comparable positives are kind of preposterously exaggerated, trivial positives by fair comparison. The little chortles and fun of life, your sneezes, don't add up to enough bliss to in any way compensate for the hard misery of the inevitable destruction that will take place because of the rules, okay, of the physical universe in the context of the inevitable rules of a system of evolution that creates these monsters that, frankly, it has to destroy most of... Oh, that's right. It destroys everything it creates because there's no space for the extra, so to speak. You can only take territory once, and once you've populated it, you have to kill everything that's on it if you're going to keep populating it with new members. So creating is bad business. There should be a word for it besides saying something like it's unprofitable. You know, destructive, you know, that implies breaking something, and that's not really the point. The point is it's a decidedly negative value equation, that it produces a negative outcome in net. And it's certainly, if you think of it in terms of the imposition of it, where you're assuming or presuming you know what's best for something else, there's a violation of rudeness rules that basically say you really don't have a right to tell somebody else it's worth it and to force it on them. That's not your territory. That's their territory. And if you're going to be a imposer, you really do have to have some kind of insurance policy or some kind of way to pay back the people you have wronged with your assumption that or your false statement, actually, that in any way anything you create is worth it, because it's just not true, and you know it. I don't have to explain it to you. If you gave birth to a monstrosity, a real one, not just an analogistic one, something with horrific, you know, deformities, just awful, eyes in the wrong place, all kinds of things in the wrong place, all kinds of, and it just kind of screamed in anguish. You know you made a mistake. You know that's, whoops. And there's no way to clean it up. What it experiences is your fault, and it's going to be decidedly negative. And you wouldn't volunteer to take its place. And it's just a fact that we can't test, unfortunately, but it's a fact. And I think you know it, that you wouldn't have the worst life. You wouldn't choose to, you know, oh, it'll be just fine. I'll live the worst life and the worst death, and it'll be just fine. and I'll be very happy with my decision. Bullshit. Yeah. So, anyway, so that's what we do here now. Mostly, because it's the most important subject in the universe. That's just the way it turns out, that this whole value subject and, you know, arguments about how it can be wasted and squandered and putrefied, you know, by human recklessness, sloppiness, ignorance, delusions, and nonsense, is the most important subject. I mean, accurately describing the redness of something isn't, it's important to make distinctions between red and orange, but it's not nearly as important as recognizing what we're playing with as we involve ourselves in being a living thing, a thinking, feeling, being in the universe. The fact is, what we do will create a value outcome. The world will have either more comfort or more pain in it based on how you interact in it, and it's just a fact. And it goes deep into the future, and that's why the logic necessitates the recognition of the fact that you can't be a defender or a placator of, or in some way a facilitator of, actions that create the syndrome of waste in the future, that will have beings put it unnecessarily at risk, unnecessarily, and a risk that is discernibly real, and there really isn't any way to excuse accepting the risk, because again, we're back to the imposition, where you really don't have a right to put somebody else in jeopardy because you have some notion of imagined purpose or function, something like that. So the arguments involved are lots of them. There's all kinds of arguments I've made in the past about how evolution works, or how the economy works, or how all these systems, how our psychology works in terms of how we're dupable and foolable, that we are capable of being motivated, by just nonsense in our head, a sense of value rather than a calculation of value. We're biased by a nature that compels us to think. It puts us in a circumstance much like somebody swimming in quicksand, where there's a certain urgency to be gratified, to satisfy the need to get out of the quicksand, that is, to get out of our loneliness or our deprivation or our desire, and to swim towards what we think will satisfy or complete us. And the fact is, there's no completing, just like there's no "and they lived happily ever after." None of that nonsense, fable, bullshit happens. The fact is that all the stories, just about without exception, end badly. Tragically, sadly, not well. So that's what we're doing. that's the idea. So again, it's 20 years, it's thousands of videos, and really there's only one, there's one subject. You ultimately get to the question of saying, what's of value in the universe? The only thing reasonable to say that has value is the experience of an organism that can do this imagining of the creation of the sensation of pleasure and pain. And the argument is that that sensation is really, if you really start to pick at it, you can figure out that you don't really feel pleasure. You get relief from your fetters, from things that are either threatening to hurt you, or things, causing fear, or actual physical manifestations of function that are unpleasant, and you derive a great deal of gratification when you have fixed. Okay, the urgency of the necessity of a deprivation that needs to be gratified. So you're thirsty and you drink. You're hungry, you eat. You're horny, you blah. You do a lot of different, you know, it really doesn't, all kinds of things you can do. Anyway, so that's it. You know, though, ultimately you're just arguing about, is there something else in the universe that we could talk about that could actually be relevant, independent of how it affects feeling things? So you can't really talk about socialism or capitalism or any of that crap without really talking about, well, what does the sentient, the net sentient condition, how is it improved or diminished by some strategy of interaction as conscious beings? And that's all you can really argue. There's no other part of it that matters except figuring out, did you create a victim? So I could use analogies and say, okay, we could compare it to making victims. Like, you could take everybody in your car to go to Disneyland, and you know you have bald tires, and there's some risk that you get a blowout, crash the car, everybody's horribly injured. or you could just have the situation where there's not enough room in the car, so somebody has to be dragged behind the car and will have a really bad time. All of the negative will be dumped on the one individual. So there are two different ways of evaluating. One about how bad can you make it for a minority of people, and then another condition where you could argue about how bad are you allowed to make it for all people. How sick can you make everybody? You know, and it's okay. You have permission. So a lot of this comes down to, you know, the majority rule and all that kind of stuff as a social institution. So I've talked substantially about the social contract and you know, how it's just a pragmatic compromise and doesn't have anything to do with real philosophy, frankly. It doesn't have anything to do with the truth. And the fact is majorities are moronic. So we already know that there's nothing about, the consensus of the governed that means anything, because obviously in a lot of moronic countries, the consensus of the government is you can sell your kids. Or you can go on a jihad because somebody doesn't have your religious perspective. All that kind of crap. We can put bounties on people's heads and that's fine. All kinds of rubbish. So clearly there's the majority of people have some sense of some purpose built into existence, even though it can be scientifically explained that there's just no reason, no logic that can defend that position, that it's really just a mechanism that builds machines. And, the machines are required to, meet the conditions imposed by an environment. And the concept is called natural selection, but it's just circumstantial selection. And everything, snakes are snakes, and whatever, assassin bugs or assassin bugs, and praying mantises are praying mantises, and they're not built, you know, crocodiles. They're just built to be durable and efficient. And depending on under what circumstances they had to survive, how demanding those circumstances are, their efficiency can be quite high in terms of survival in almost any circumstance, how durable they are, how tough. And obviously other animals that can engineer an environment can become incredibly weak because of the tools they use to create a hive to hide in, you know, all kinds of mechanisms, so they can become physically less because they are making an environment that's physically less demanding. So there's so much to that subject, you know, how evolution constructs monsters. And our construction is an interesting subject. People talk about it as if it's, well, we have this bigger brain. And it's incidentally bigger. It's not substantially bigger. So it's just, and it's clearly not about size, because technically you could argue that, well, ants are tiny. There's some ants are so tiny, microscopic. And obviously their brain is operating six legs and antennas and all kinds of sense organs. They're functioning at a pretty high level, considering their brain is about a million or a billion times smaller than ours. So it'd be kind of ridiculous to say we couldn't do much better if we had a billion ant brains, because we probably could. So it's not high engineering, and clearly what made the difference for the transition from mankind from ape, it's not because, you know, we're fundamentally different. It's just that we were able to learn more words and create a vocabulary, a deep vocabulary. And unfortunately, it's not, you know, pretty far from perfect in the sense that, yes, I don't really have a word for negative value. You know, you have profit, but you don't really have a good word for loss. Because again, and loss implies you had something and you lost it. It doesn't just imply it's just bad. It's, you know, insufficiently efficient. So I have to say things like that now and then, where I have to build some other phrase to describe some concept of something being deficiently efficient, instead of being just say the word that should mean that. But anyway, and so, yeah, so we acquired language and sacrificed some, you know, some of our senses are duller than the other simians. And therefore, you know, our brain is utilizing, and we're, our maturation is really slow. I've explained that, how, you know, it takes us years to get up and running, and it takes a chimpanzee about 6 months, and it's pretty much a chimpanzee. You know, the fact is we're born disabled, you know, and the operating system is installed coherent to language and acquiring it. And there's all kinds of studies that demonstrate that, yeah, the younger you are, the easier it is to learn a new language and all that kind of stuff, because that's how we evolved into machines that can gain high efficiency. If they can do this interacting and communicating thing, human beings can get an awful lot more done. If they can build on each other's experience, if they can figure out how to write down, don't step in dog do, you know, it's hard to get off your foot. You know, they can give advice to the future. And so we've capitalized on all that. We go to school, we learn all kinds of crap. Some of it useful, and you know, and it does make us more capable of understanding context and nuance, and understanding mechanics, and you know, how long it takes a car to stop if you hit the brake, and all kinds of stuff we can learn that makes us more capable of avoiding making mistakes. But unfortunately, that education is always in the context of a pro-life, pro-religion, pro-bullshit kind of context where everybody must be upbeat and positive about the whole adventure. And, because obviously parents have committed this terrible imposition, and the last thing they're going to do is let their kids be taught that your parents are reckless imposers who don't give a damn really about your welfare and are just selfish bastards and cunts. And they really weren't trying to do you a favor. They're trying to find some excuse to make their life livable, like some purpose, some job to do that's simple and seems kind of natural, I guess, and pretend they're being functional when their brain is, thinking about hookers and doing all kinds of stuff that are very anti the whole purpose of this family life they're supposed to be creating. That's all bullshit. So anyway, so that's all part of this, is there's nobody procreating for any good reasons. It's all psychology. It's all their frickin', psychological problem that makes them think having kids will get them out of the quicksand, oblige them to be focused on something that will keep them from becoming a drunk or something. They need some physical mechanism to keep them from being retarded, I guess. But yes, it's usually just an accident, a mistake, a reckless pile of garbage, and most of it driven, frankly, in most cases, in most places in the world, probably driven by women pretending they have a biological clock that needs to be satisfied, and they need to cuddle with something, and they need something to unconditionally love them, which is just such ugly rhetoric. Why somebody would even imagine such an idea that I'll impose a syndrome on something and it must love me no matter how big an asshole I am. Who the hell would want that? That's just gross. That's like having a Stepford wife or something. It's just, if you made them, if they weren't real robots, if you took a real person and forced them to be your slave, to have some brain defect that made them think they're obligated to you, and you've somehow been so good to them and such a benefactor, and their whole life would be garbage without you, in some delusion. Forcing something to love you. Yeah, that's just gross. Anyway, all right. So that's So all the videos are about this, and it doesn't seem like it should be that complicated, I guess is the point, right? That, all right, so you just basically have this physical universe. It has these physical rules. The rules don't have anything in it about purpose and function and getting somewhere. The universe isn't trying to build a car and drive somewhere. And all of this crap just happens because of thermodynamics, and then chemistry takes over, and you get this molecule that can replicate, and you're off to the races in terms of making these little monsters, blah, 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 blah. And it has these bizarre stages, where first you make living things that don't have neurons and can't make a brain, obviously, and then you end up with living thing that is made of living things, that you've enslaved a whole bunch of cells that are obligated to function in ways just to produce the chemistry to keep you functioning so your neurons can function, so your neurons can pretend to be important and, vital. And again, part of it's pretending, but the real fact is that through this process of billions of interactions inside of your body, the fact is you do produce consciousness. You produce this sense of awareness. Your brain produces this illusion that, there's a sensation. And the fact is you can't deny its existence because you're experiencing it. So it does work, but it's not a thing, it's an event. So you could argue that a lot of physics is like that, like a photon hitting a surface. It isn't a thing doing something. It's an event happening between things. And that's our consciousness. It's an event that takes place in brains. And we have these things called experiences. And the best word is to say feelings. And the feelings have decided character of being categorizable as decidedly negative, awful, repugnant, horrible, don't ever do that to me again. And, the alternative of wonderful, blissful, happy, good. And the good, though, like I said, this is where you do this thinking. You can understand that the good really is made out of relieving some negative condition. So there's only the slaver's whip. And the fact is, if he gives you a day off where he doesn't whip you, it's going to feel like the weekend and yeah, party time. That's the same way we're manipulated by evolution and this whole process of creating these machines. And they feed on just advancing a condition, that is getting your chin a little higher out of the quicksand. And such. All right, now I'll take a break. That's the introduction. Yeah, okay. It's really simple, right? It's just simple physics, simple chemistry. You end up with this biology thing that happens. The biology makes brains out of neurons, neurons with the electricity very fast, blah, 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 produces this, this matrix inside of our brain, where we are creating, a version of reality and then interacting with it as if we're a thing to interact. And it's just events in the brain, and but they're significant. There's no denying them because you're experiencing them. So I shouldn't really have to argue about how important it is that you not be tortured, because I know I definitely shouldn't be tortured. I'm damn sure that's not good for the universe if torture happens. And that's really the whole argument, is that once you know that, well, what is worth risking torture? And you figure out that, everything's just a trivial addiction and attachment. All the needs are contrived to force us to eat, to force us to drink, to force us to do these biologically necessary things to, make the machine function as required in nature. And none of it has any utility, really. It doesn't fix anything broken in the universe. So you certainly don't spend torture for something that doesn't advance the condition of the universe. The universe is not diminished because there aren't Martians on Mars. And I think you know that, because I think you never spend a single day crying, over the tragedy of the absent Martians. Because if there were Martians, they'd just be a pain in the ass. It'd be another immigrant. So anyway, so that's enough of a beginning. Yeah. All right, continuing. So, part of this, narrative is describing the fact that, it's about describing reality. And for the what purpose is, again, it's because it's important. So it's like you're trying to find the golden goose. We have to turn it into some adventure, some, free energy. You're trying to get to something called the truth, and the idea is the truth is connected to a sort of perfection, or we're off to see the wizard kind of thing, some solution, the big solution, the grand solution, the biggest of solutions. Anyway, and so the process is taking the facts that we can glean, okay, in the environmental events that exist, the human experiences, all of that kind of crap, the physics, the chemistry, the all the science you can muster, and connect these dots, or do this detecting of the facts of what has happened here on Earth, what our significance is, what it means, okay, to be alive in the universe. And ultimately, I'm playing the part of some lawyer, okay, Scheisser, and, you know, attempting to defend a position. Now, I'm going to argue that I'm a really, you know, principled and honest lawyer, and my ambition isn't to do anything other than defend the truth, no matter what its consequences to whatever I'm defending, which is, again, just a perception of reality that I can't evade, I can't avoid, I can't find some way around it. So again, it's kind of like you can say, I like ice cream, and then you can find out, well, ice cream is made out of the torment of cows. So, you know, I really can't support that, so I can't eat ice cream. That kind of thing. It's not a truth I want to be true. It's just a fact. That's what it comes with. So you can't support certain things without supporting what comes with them. And that's the whole point here of putting life on trial. So that's sort of what's the argument is. Now, it sounds interesting to say, let's put life on trial. But it's really not life. It's feeling life. And it's really putting ouch on trial. It's putting the existence of the capacity to manifest negative, horrible, nasty, awful sensations that's on trial. And it comes with the idea that, well, the only way you can have the positive ones is to accept the existence of the negative ones. And so the defenders of some other thing, you know, making some other argument, in a sense, discount the fact that they have to win this trial first. Or they have to at least pay attention to it in this context. So again, to just try to summarize and pragmatically accept, okay, well, yes, let's just call it life, even though the only thing we're really talking about is the existence of feeling life. And what we're really talking about is the existence of feeling life that manifests negative sensations, unpleasant, horrible, nasty, tormenting, really bad, really, really bad, really, 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 really bad sensations. And they really can come in those varieties, right? I mean, as you get older in life, you'll have this event happen where you said, oh, I thought I could only feel this much pain, and that was as much as I could feel. And then you'll find out, oh, you can double that. Oh. And so you're always vulnerable to some kind of experience that is more than you thought was the worst of it. And so much of your life, you know, you spend with your limited understanding, because you really haven't experienced all that can be experienced. You've only experienced a small volume of the actual potential. So this is where you have to use your intelligence and recognize that, yes, that's my obligation, is to imagine, okay, what if, and recognize that your experience isn't all experience of the universe, and that there's a whole bunch of experience that obviously you wouldn't want to experience. And you know why you wouldn't want to experience it quite clearly, because you know it's really, really, really bad. Okay. So anyway, so I'm just a lawyer. I'm just a presenter of what I consider to be the pertinent and important facts. And, you know, that's kind of why the channel's called Do Not God, is because, you know, that's just silly. You know, that just ruins the whole connect the dot things, because those are all just made up silly dots. There's absolutely zero evidence. It makes no sense. It's got all kinds of paradoxes built into it. It's just fish stories, the preposterously silly talking fish stories, frankly. Absolutely no credibility as a theory of reality. No evidence, no anything. Just horrible crap. I mean, it's worse than UFOs. I mean, UFOs at least have some kind of silly pictures they can show you now and then. You don't have anything close to the person with the photograph with no arm, and then they have an arm. Yeah, that never happens, because miracles never happen, and because gods don't exist, and the whole thing is just so goddamn destructive to reasoning and logic and being sensible, you understanding the context of your existence as a airborne fish, which you really are. You know, you're pretty, you know, if you really analyze it, really dissect what you are, you're still fishing. You're just a fish. And you're just swimming in a different medium now, but you're just doing the same bullshit they do. Seek, 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 seek. And, you know, for no good reason. Just to satisfy biological necessities, to keep you seeking the next day. So there are lots of arguments. You can do this whole trolley thing. You can do all kinds of different philosophical ways of picking at the truth and getting to the fact that, you know, look, you go to sleep every night, you're effectively dead, you know, in the sense that you're not doing the consciousness thing. And yes, you might have some dreams here and there, but we know that most of the time you're not doing any of that. You're just being not here. And, you know, the brain isn't manifesting the whole feeling, you know, being alive thing isn't really happening. And it's obviously not so bad. And it's obviously a condition from which, if you never woke, you couldn't say you were harmed in some way. Oh, how tormenting and horrible it was. No, it's not going to be any of that. So death isn't a bad thing. It's dying that sucks. And so these are all important little distinctions to make in the listing of the circumstance, and to make these arguments about how do we defend the truth. Now, the good news is, for a lot of people on Earth, they already recognize the truth that this ain't all that, okay? That life is messy and ugly and sloppy and expensive and all of those things. It's not a joy ride. It's not a free ride. It comes with real nasty potentialities, and they are risk averse to being a participant in making things any worse, at least. And so they're cautious about creating another generation. And they have some respect for the magnitude of that responsibility and all of that crap. So people who do have an education, who have had some exposure to world history, who have read the stories about all these tragic ends, you know, that all these, you know, great people destroyed by, you know, horrible diseases and all kinds of terrible things that happen, well beyond our control. And, you know, they recognize that, you know, they don't want to be a participant in spilling more milk that has to be cleaned up. And so in that sense, I'm speaking to a kind of choir, that there's a lot of people that, you know, have that minimum perception that it's a serious business making a human being and it doesn't take much of a reach to recognize it goes beyond just human beings. And the fact is, it's a hell of a thing to support the creation of lions when 9 out of 10 of the little cubbers are going to get horribly murdered. And to say, it'll be worth it. The one lion that'll survive to reproduce is worth the dead kittens. And that's, to me, one of the more persuasive arguments in this trial, is just to point out that the attrition in nature is obscene, and the price paid for the bliss of your romantic interlude, this thing you spend your life chasing, you're completing, the effort to become complete, is going to be not all that. I mean, that's really the point, too, is that you can just make this argument that, just think of how many people invested so much in getting there, and then the day after the honeymoon, they're trying to engineer their mate's demise. Just recognizing this is, this isn't going to be what I thought it would be. I'm still in the quicksand, and I'm going to have to keep struggling and swimming. And, that's the, so people with a little bit of life experience, I think the older people would be, in terms of their life maturity, and the less likely they would be to be creating a new problem. It's certainly in sufficient numbers to maintain human existence, that most people see how farcical it all is. Married with Children, the TV show, for example, it's kind of just basically, the satire rings too true. So this isn't something that has to be, this subject isn't really the subject, because unfortunately the only people that need to be talked to aren't the people who are, well, I still think life is good, and I still, they're still waving some sort of pro-human flag, but their behavior is acknowledging that, they're less than confident, in that perception. And so that's already a win. So even if they won't call themselves antinatalists, or they won't call themselves effelists, or they won't call themselves anti, the fact is they're already voting that way, in a sense, by their actions. That's where they're walking. So even if they're not talking that subject, they're walking that subject. So the real problem are the people who, ignorant masses, the huddled crap of the, of bleak and horrid civilizations we've created, the mental midgets, frankly, in terms of how narrow and inadequate their experience and education has been. Simple things where they can't even figure out simple courtesies, that you don't piss in somebody else's drinking water or something. All kinds of diminished capacity created by insufficient exposure to reality, in the sense of history and accurate scientific information about how things work and what's actually happened on this planet. Because they live in these closed societies where there's just none of that information is provided. And so they're just indoctrinated into wearing a uniform and liking it. And, you know, just they're just crude robots with a poorly defined agenda that has something to do with just getting to some position where it looks like you function, even if you don't. I don't even know how to describe some of it, frankly. You know, I don't see the pride in wearing your burqa. You know, I don't know. It's hard to imagine somebody being so disconnected from reality that this would be something they're proud of, you know, is hiding, you know, in their burqa. Hilarious. You know, that they fully, you know, they're fully actualized as a human intelligence, you know, hiding inside a burqa, you know. Too ridiculous. So anyway, that's the real problem, okay, is the ignorant assholes of the world, the poor people, okay, who just keep recklessly creating a mess and, you know, another generation of insufficiently educated, poorly motivated monster morons or moron monsters. And obviously they're not watching this video, so that's the problem. The problem is getting access to all these ignorant people is difficult because they're only watching fail videos or sports or some other bullshit. They're not really curious about the world, and certainly the idea of philosophically imagining, you know, the meaning in any other context, but the dogma that mommy said so. you know, we've all been matadors, and so we just live to be a matador, even though it's cruel and stupid, that kind of thing. So, yeah, so I think I'll take another pause, and then we'll sum up another video. Yeah, it does have a purpose. I mean, look, the purpose is to get this narrower and narrower and figure out what exactly the arrow has to hit. And that's always been the problem, is what exactly does the arrow have to hit here? I mean, where, you know, what's the real disease that needs curing? And I guess the argument simply is that poverty and ignorance has to be cured. Because unfortunately, most people have a sense that democracy is the way to go. And, you know, and unfortunately, if most people are underqualified, you know, you're not going to have much of a democracy. Your democracy won't be able to do anything sufficiently efficient. Because it's too polluted by stupid. It's a fact. Yeah, it's a very nice shirt. Anyway, figure I should throw it in there. Anyway, I'll be back. All right, back. So, summing up. So, the life on trial thing is probably a good theme, okay, for the context of my purpose and function is basically to make these arguments to a jury that isn't formally exist, but exists in the sense that anyone willing to listen to the videos. And, you know, and if they have this counter opinion, okay, that somehow they see something I'm not seeing, and they're going to claim it's a real thing they're seeing, then, yeah, it's likely I've already heard the arguments, okay? I mean, I don't think anybody's got any secret argument about how God must exist beyond some sort of argument like, well, I personally interacted with the sparkling source thingy, you know, And it told me God existed. Yeah, so yeah, that's as about as proof as you can get, huh? Anyway, I had the feeling. I could feel it in my heart, whatever the nonsense is. Anyway, and then the argument there is just this idea that, okay, well, you have to take what life is and what the whole price has been. So I could talk about, hundreds of millions of years of biological evolution. And if you just consider it in the human context, of a couple of million years of human existence, at least, where the genetics existed, let's just say our chromosome, the modern human chromosome. It's bleak, in terms of, obviously women produce a lot of eggs, whatever it is, 40 times 12. 200 and 300, whatever it is, 400 eggs, potential peoples. And in nature, they would have 10, 12, 13, 14 kids. And the fact is that all but two of them were likely to survive. Human population grew, so that implies three or four maybe. But the fact was is that a lot of, for most of human history, most of your kids, you had to watch them die badly, slowly, nastily. And that is your counter argument is that would be a life worth living. I personally can't imagine being in any condition to enjoy my life if I had lost a single child thing, event. That would be enough to sour me for the rest of my life. I don't think I'd need some other horror. There'd be some, I guess you can imagine a sibling, that's also pretty disruptive, to some. Oh yes, it's all for fun. It's all a joy ride. It's all just blah 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 blah. So I mean, I lost a sister at 30. Right after she had a kid, and you just there's nowhere to put that in your brain. And but what if it happened when she was 15? It would be even more devastating. Because frankly, that'd be before she turned into an asshole. Regardless, there is this perception of they're more pure and more clean and more innocent the younger they are, right? And the older people get, the more hateable they get. The less useful, the more they're part of the problem, not part of the solution, kind of thing, or something. And so, not that you could ever wish negative, but it's easier to take if it happens, because they don't retain, like the cat. It wouldn't matter when the cat died, it was always going to be shitty, because it never grew up, so to speak. Never changed into something else. But anyway, so it is a, I don't see how anybody can really make a sensible argument that life's worth living in those conditions. So for most of human history, they weren't, it wasn't a life worth living because it, contained unacceptable ugliness of brutality, torture, just nasty horror, way too much of it. So anyway, I just don't think you could make the argument. I can't, it's hard for me to imagine how somebody could make an argument defending it's perfectly fine. You watch a couple of kids die, who the fuck cares? you just have some more. You know, you just replace them. They don't mean anything, really. It's not, you know, it's not important that their experience is horrible. You know, no, that's not important. I don't know how anybody could do that, how they could pervert their perspective enough to make that an acceptable thing. So anyway, we fixed a lot of that, you know, with modern technology. But in the same sense, we're using modern technology to make it possible for you to die, you know, more than once. And so in some sense, the trade-off isn't very good because we don't kill you young. So it doesn't look as tragic because you don't die when you're a kid. But you live so bleakly and so cripply and so, you know, in such a small little cage. And then, you know, go through so many bedridden hours that it's, you know, it still makes you squint. Say, oof. You know, no, let's not keep doing this. Too silly. So anyway, I think that's enough of a video and such. So I'll, you know, even though, you know, people complain that it's all redundant and it's all blah, blah, blah. Yeah, too bad. That, you know, that's unfortunately, it has to be, because there's not a single mind that you're trying to convert. It's a whole bunch. Each juror is different, and they all have to be spoken to in their language, and from their starting points. And you have to, you know, take each one by the hand and lead them, you know, to the water. You know, and yes, they may still not drink it, but you know, I can only do what the best I can do. Well, no, I don't do the best I can do. Probably I do the the best my brain contrives as a strategy in a complicated life that I have to live, where you know, I have to do real works and jobs and this and that and different things, all kinds of distractions that wear me down. And anyway, yeah, but working on it and such, you know, it is weird, frankly, that there's so many people on this planet. And there's so few doing this. And yet people complain that it's redundant. It's kind of funny. Anyway, I mean, I don't know where I go to watch this video in some other human's variety of it. You know, just point me in that direction, please. But anyway, so enough said. So, till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot, and yeah, I should build a little toy courtroom, I guess. You know, and I could have little, you know, they could argue. I don't know what, you know, I saw some like tonight, just kind of weird, just the whole AI thing and what it's doing. And it was just kind of funny because they took an old radio show, you know, some detective story, and they just took, you know, they made fake people talking. And so the backgrounds were kind of shit, but the people looked like people pretty much. And, you know, a little anime looking, a little cartoony, but not too bad. And it was just kind of interesting, you know, of a added value kind of argument to the content, you know, 100-year-old stuff, you know, revamped, you know, into, you know, almost consumable, frankly, and such. Yeah, I mean, it's still just a little too synthetic, but, you know, whatever. It's all getting there. And it just sort of demonstrates how formulaic, you know, and how few, you know, you don't need, you know, we don't need the whole, we don't need all the pixels to enjoy the movie kind of thing. But anyway, the storytelling. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of true. You know, I'm not a big fan of animated movies, but the fact is that, you know, you can watch one and it does fool you, sort of. You know, The Simpsons or even South Park was so bad. You know, and it's just, yeah, you know, once you get used to it, it's the characters become as real as if they were real characters. You learn to accept a pretty minimal description of a human being. Hard to not see Cartman as a person. You know, but he's completely synthetic. Yeah. Anyway, so till the next time and such and so forth.